Okay. This week's Parsha, Parsha's Balak, one can't help but wonder at, for lack of a better word, the dichotomy between the written law, the Torah Shebichsav, and the oral law, the Torah Shebaalpeh, right, regarding the story of Bilam. You know, if you look at the story of Bilam, you know, how he was hired by Balak to curse the Jewish people, you just read the psukim literally, Bilam looks like a big tzaddik, a real righteous man, because from the get-go he says, Balak, I'm only going to do what God says, and I'm only doing what God says, and he never really left, to go curse Israel until he got divine permission, right? And then after that, and when the angel confronts him, he's willing to turn back, said, oh, no, go. Whatever God, whatever I tell you in the name of God to say, that's what you have to say, right? And Bilam says, okay, I got no problem with those conditions. And indeed, he goes and he blesses the people instead of cursing them. And the whole time he's telling Balak, listen, I'm doing what God says. I told you from the get-go, I'm only going to do what God says. Sounds like a very righteous person playing by the rules. Right, it's just through Rashi that, obviously Rashi's coming from the tradition of the Chazal and the Midrashim and in the Gemara. So Rashi points out how he really wanted from the get-go and he was greedy, he really wanted money, and he finds very subtle hints in the Chumash. And Rashi finds a way, and Rashi is coming from Chazal, right? Rashi summarizes Chazal, summarizes the Torah Shebaalpeh, and finds allusions on each way he's really trying to manipulate God to give him permission to go. Because B'derech Shalom Rotzelech Molichol, so the way a person really wants to go, so God leads him, and everything is all about manipulating God and trying, which we don't get that message from the literal words of the Chumash at all. Of course, once we are enlightened by Rashi, so retroactively, so we could see it in the Chumash very subtly, right? So of course we have many other instances like this, the oral law sheds a radically different light on the written law, right? And only in retrospect, after we learn the oral law and we accept it, can we go back and see in the written law what the oral law is referring to. But on our own, it would have never looked like that at all, right? So, it's time, therefore, to take somebody to discuss this issue of the secret of the why sometimes the written law and the oral law on the surface are saying very different things, and it takes a tremendous depth, to reconcile the two, that only after we accept the oral law as being true can we go back to the written law and then start seeing the illusions of how it's alluded to in the pasuk, which is very, like I said, very subtle, and we only are enlightened to it only after we accept it from the oral law, but we've never come to it by ourselves, if not for the fact that we had this tradition. Only once we have this tradition, we're enlightened to see it in the Chumash only in retrospect. So why is that? Why does it work that way? And why is Bilam a whole manifestation of this syndrome? Of how, the Torah Shebaalpeh, the Torah Shebichsav, have very, very complicated interrelationship with each other. Not a easy, apparent one, sometimes. Okay. So, we may have spoken about this before in earlier sessions in this series, right? That, the truth is, the dichotomy, for lack of a better word, between the written law and the oral law is mamash representative of how in reality there are two levels. There's the level of the visible, right? And then there's the level of the invisible. It only exists as an idea, right? I can only explain it to you, but you can't see it, right? I can explain it to you, and maybe if you accept the explanation, so you'll see it in your mind's eye because you've accepted the explanation, but it's not tangibly visible, right? The flesh eyes don't see it, right? These are the two that we have in reality. Right? There's the things that we see and the things that, we only see in our mind's eye, like subatomic particles. No one's ever seen them, right? But, the mind dictates that they must be, let alone things that are ruchani, that are totally spiritual entities, that, the prophet sees them, but not with flesh eyes, because they're not, visible to the flesh eyes. It's in, you know, what we call the mind's eye. Say that they exist as in the world of ideas. Of course, the world of ideas is more real than the physical world, as we know. Even in general philosophy, we say that. Right. So, but these are the two types of levels that there are in reality. Ramchal in his Sefer HaHigayon, his Book of Logic, calls it Muchashim, the same things that could be sensed, you know, the physical senses, and the Muskalim, the ideas, you know, that we know to be true only because of the mind. Right. These are two levels of reality. And since, you know, Torah is actually the root programming of reality, so that's why the Torah has to also have these two forms to it, parallel to these two layers of reality, that there'll be an aspect of Torah that's visibly, you know, tangible, or I should say tangibly visible, right, which is the written law, right? You see it black on white. This is God's word, black on white, right? Seeing is believing, and you see it. The Torah Sheba Chasav is absorbed with the sense of sight. Torah Sheba Peh is, you know, ideas. It's explanations. It's explanations. That's ideas. And that's why binoculars has to be carried, you know, orally and always be offered as an explanation. And by original design, it wasn't meant to be written at all. Because Torah Sheba Peh is, you know, represented the world of ideas, and Torah Sheba Chasav is represented of the sensible world. Right, and this is the, you know, sensible meaning the world that can be detected by the senses. Right, and this I think is the secret why people have an easier time accepting the Chumash as being divine law, and have a harder time with the oral law, even though there's no logical basis for this distinction, because it all was handed down by the same people. It's handed down by our ancestors equally, and they said about both of them equally that the word of God. All right, so if we trust our ancestors, we should trust them equally on the oral like we trust them on the written law. Right, but the reason is because the written law is more tangible. There's this book, the Bible, and because it takes on a tangible form, people accept it more as being a reality that's divine, because it has more of a tangible form onto its own, whereas the oral remains ideas. So it's hard for people to relate to. That's how I understand the syndrome, that some people could easier accept the Chumash as being divine than the oral law. Right? But in the person also, there's this dichotomy, right? There's the, and this is the big thesis of the Chovos HaLevavos. Right? The big thesis of the Chovos HaLevavos in his introduction is, there's duties of the organs, Chovos HaLevavos, Chovos, duties of the heart. And man has his external world, you know, and that's the world of three dimensions. What Descartes called the world of extension, the world that interacts in three dimensions, right? You know, the tangible world, which he interacts with his arms and his legs, he does things and he works and he, you know, actions, right? But there's the world of the heart, it's the world of his ideas, that's the world of his, you know, his ideology, his values, his morals, that's all in the heart, right? And he said most of halacha, you know, that was written till his date, he was from the, he lived in the same time as the Gaonim, you know, and there were already halachic works. He said all the halachic works that were written talk about duties of the organs. There hasn't been anything written about the duties of the heart. You know, they all wrote about how to shake a lulav, how to put on tefillin, actions, right? No one's yet written a work like mine of talking about what to think, what to believe. You know, what type of midas, character traits a person should acquire into his essence. You know, man's inner world. And this dichotomy between man's outer world and man's inner world, right, it falls into the same pattern as Torah Sheba Chasav, outer, visible, and Torah Sheba Peh, ideas. So that's inner world, world of ideas and values, right? So it's perfectly proud. The dichotomy between Torah Sheba Peh and Torah Sheba Peh is, you know, mamish is beside, it's in the secret of the dichotomy, and it's perfectly proud. It's a dichotomy between the sensible world, or the world that's perceived by senses, and the world of ideas. Perfectly parallel. And it's a secret between, you know, differences between the two, right? And that's in the man himself. His organs versus, you know, what's going on in his mind and heart. You know, so his organs, I can see what he's doing. I don't know what he's thinking. That's invisible. Like the Torah Sheba Peh is invisible. And this is the secret by Bilam also. Outwardly, he was very, very frum. And outwardly, he was acted very righteous. He put on a great show. You know, so he always, you know, he walked the walk and he talked the talk and he walked the talk and talked the walk, right? And whatever the expression goes, of, you know, always doing what it takes to seek approval and to flatter and to put on a good show. He always did the frum thing. He always did what he can to appear righteous in the eyes of everyone. Right? Great politician, great actor. Right? He always did the right thing and said the right thing. Where he was crooked is in the heart. That's where he was crooked. He wasn't crooked in action. In action, he put on a great show. His crookedness was in his heart. And that's what Chazal say, that they contrast the Talmidim, the students of Bilam, the students of Avraham Avinu, the students of Bilam, they are haughty. They're full of jealousy. They're full of greed. Haughty, jealousy, greed, these are all in the heart. Right? Outwardly, you know, they may, you know, do the righteous, socially acceptable thing, socially valued thing, right? But in the heart. And whereas the Talmidim of Avraham Avinu, they are humble, right? They are selfless. They're not jealous of anybody there, you know, right? So you could have, you know, the disciples of Avraham Avinu and the disciples of Bilam doing the exact same things, acting equally as religious and equally as socially acceptable. The difference is in the heart, right? I'm saying that. The difference is in the heart. What was so crooked about Bilam was that his heart, his values, his ideas were off. And that's the secret, right? Why in as far as the written law, he appears very righteous, because outwardly that was the case. And the written law is the aspect of Torah that reflects the sensible reality. I mean by that, as I said before, the aspect of reality that is, you know, able to be perceived by the senses, vis-a-vis, you know, how he looked and how he sounded, right? He looked like a very righteous guy. And the Torah Shebichtav that reflects that level of reality, you know, portrays it that way, right? The Torah Shebaal Peh that's parallel to the whole dimension of ideas and in the person, therefore, his values and his ideology, right? So there's where you see how crooked he was and how greedy he was and, you know, and how he was just a big manipulator. So that's so actually the dichotomy, for lack of a better word, between the written law's portrayal and the oral law's portrayal is actually reflecting the reality of how he looked and acted versus what he was thinking and hoping for. Right? There's a lot more. It's a very, very deep concept. You know, but, you know, we will stop here. Good chance.